It's Open Call with Eric and Chris.
That's me.
It's a show that you'll never want to miss. It's Open Call.
And Amber Petty.
Yay, we have an in-studio guest.
Yeah. Hello.
Or in-garage guest.
Yeah. It's Amber Petty. Welcome, Amber.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
We are excited to have you.
It's Open Call. It's Monday, January 28th. I'm Chris Grace.
I'm Eric Michaud.
And we have Amber as a special guest today because we are going to talk about Rent Live.
Wee!
And Amber and Eric were at
It was an invited dress rehearsal. It was the first time they had ever done a run with a live audience, and I believe it was the first time they ever did a run on the set.
Yeah, it sounded like it was the first time they'd run the show in its entirety at all, anywhere.
And we were going to do a podcast after that, except you guys had to sign NDAs.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we were not allowed to divulge the secrets, the many secrets of the live show. Yeah.
But now that it's aired, all gloves are off.
Yeah, and I assume that you... I assume that NDA expired.
I
assume it's not like
I mean, also, it's not like there was, it's not like the secret was they pre-planned breaking that dude's leg. And
some people think it was.
You know, there wasn't.
Some dumb people on Eric's Facebook feed that it was like a conspiracy theory to avoid doing it live.
Oh, well, they are just people that have really great imaginations and really overestimate how much Fox cares about the quality of their programming, I would say.
That's true, yeah.
Because we saw Rocky Horror.
So. Oh, yeah. Lord in heaven. Yeah. And that was not live at all.
No.
They had all the time in the world to make that right, and they did not do it.
Oh, that wasn't live.
No, no. It was kind of filmed... it was filmed more like stagily or whatever.
Yeah.
Like it didn't look like a TV show per se, but it was not live, and it wasn't meant, you know, wasn't like... purported to be. So
So let's talk first about you guys when you went to see the invited dress. What were your thoughts back then, like, you know, all of 2 weeks ago?
I was really excited to go, and because I do love Rent, but as I've gotten older, I see more of the problems with Rent, you know, and like as a person, as you guys had, like an actual person trying to be an artist in New York working, you have, when you do that for real, you have a lot less sympathy for people that literally don't have to pay rent and never have a job for the entirety of a 2 year span. but still, I still really like it. And then I was like, this will be fun. These live shows are usually bad, but entertaining. And then we got there and we saw the whole set, and I about just died and cried the whole rest of the time because I was just 14 years old and so excited to see Rent. So I didn't have a great objective view of it.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing it live was, I thought the set was really neat. Mm-hmm. I liked how it was very much like the Broadway version of it, but a little, you know, like had some twists to it to make it more interesting. And what was funny was thinking about it later, I was like, I don't think any of the people I saw were anywhere near as good I saw in this dress rehearsal. None of them were really that great, except the guy that played Collins. They're probably the worst of all the Rents I've seen, but I still enjoyed it so much watching it live that it was sad on my part because I was like, anyone could have done Rent live to me, and I would have just been like, look at that Rent. I'm so pleased.
Mrs. Johnson's fourth grade class is doing Rent, and Amber is bawling.
Is it done in high schools?
Sometimes.
There's a Rent Junior. Yeah.
What's Rent Junior?
It's like a sanitized version that takes out, I think they all have cancer instead of AIDS.
I've heard that there's one where they all have diabetes. Oh. I don't know that that's actually true.
I think that was we weren't sure if that was real or not.
I can't imagine that's real because that's a
metformin break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a real different issue. Yeah, they took too many sweets. That's why Roger. But his girlfriend still killed herself.
Yeah.
Well, in that version. But yeah, so seeing it live, literally anyone could have done it, and I would have been impressed.
Had you seen the recent Pantages one?
No.
Like the 20th anniversary?
No, I didn't. I saw the like original touring cast of Rent, and I saw Rent on Broadway. So I've never seen a touring since then. So that was like in 1997.
I think there's another one coming this year.
Mm-hmm, there is.
So
there's another one coming. I might go see that one just to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it'll have... I don't know. I was like transported to a former life going to that set. It was very weird, and I did not expect to just have like my entire like 13 through 17 years old like vividly flash before my eyes. And then also because you had to think about like how much New York has changed. So then I'd be sitting there being like, Bohemia is dead. Benny has won. Mm-hmm. None of these things would ever happen. No, like people could live with AIDS today, which is lovely, but they couldn't live in Manhattan and none of them could have right. any of their things they do any of the shit they do. Mark would have a YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that was a...
Was it called Buzzline in the original yeah. production? Oh, that's very...
I know, it's kind of BuzzFeed-y.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at first I was like, why'd you change it to Buzzline? Your cute little BuzzFeed homage here. And then I realized that was the original thing.
Hmm.
And I don't think Rent is trying to slam BuzzFeed hard. New Rent. So yeah, now I still thought people had problems when we saw the show.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, what was your experience like, Eric?
Similar, I think. I saw the original cast of Rent twice. And then I'd seen tours, and I've seen a college production, and I've seen a regional production. So I've seen a lot of Rent in my day, and I've mm-hmm. I was definitely one of those Rent head kids. Like I waited on the street for tickets, and you know, I was a Rent head for sure. In 96, by 97, I had outgrown it.
so fast.
Well, because I had started like when anything gets a lot of fever and hype around it, I tend to start kind of analyzing why, and then I start looking at things in the show a bit more objectively, and then I was like, wait, there's a lot of problems in this show. There's a lot of things that don't make sense and a lot of things that are just silly.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started to kind of step back from my emotional attachment to the show and kind of look at it as a piece of theater itself, and then I was like, well, so I've kind of detached that part of the show for myself. But in watching it, you know, when we first walked in, I was like, oh my God, it was gigantic, the scale
yeah,
of this thing.
It's huge.
Mm. Like three level sets, scaffolding everywhere, the giant Christmas tree made out of trash that you didn't really ever
didn't
get
really
to see.
You didn't really see it. It was so cool.
It was really great.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of, and like the trenches and just the way they did the seating, we were moved several times because there were only probably like 200 of us that night.
Yeah.
And that theater holds 1,000. So they were
this
basically.
Was, in Fox
Lot? In Fox Studios, yeah.
Okay.
So they were trying to do. Like, okay, we're going to have this group of people be in this part of the set because this is where we're going to be filming, and then we're going to get them all up and move them over. So we saw the show from every angle of that space, which was really interesting to see, like, how the cameras were going to work and how they were going to do things. And so it was interesting technically to see how it was all being done. While actually looking at it as a performance, I was objectively looking at it going, okay, this is their first time on the set. This is the first time with an audience. They're probably still a little unsure. So I was giving them a lot of the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there were definitely cast members where I was like, ooh, she can't sing that.
Yeah, there were a lot of wrong notes. And
yeah.
Some of them were like, I don't think this note's ever going to be right. And for some of them, it had that real feeling of like, you just haven't had the chance to like, get this in your voice properly.
Right.
And I think in 2 weeks' time, this will sound drastically different.
Mm-hmm. Right. There was one particular cast member that I was like, she's never going to get there. Or he's never going to get there. Or they're never going to get there. Whichever
pronoun
they want
to use. And
that
person was Valentina, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
100%.
Because I was a little unsure. And I do think, like, we'll never know the real truth since Rent Live wasn't live. But I was like, maybe Valentina, like, really bring it only the day of the show, because mm-hmm. just based on her Drag Race persona, that seems very much on brand for her.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, her notes were very wrong. I mean, like, they were just, like, her voice broke on every high note. It's just a lot of hard shit to sing, and I think that it was not thought through mm-hmm. by the casting and Valentina herself. And, yeah, I was like, I don't think that this is never going to sound impeccable, but I still had higher hopes mm-hmm. than what it eventually did sound like. But yeah.
So yeah, as you mentioned, the guy who played Roger broke his foot the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And so they showed probably like 90% of it was pre-recorded from the dress rehearsal.
90%.
Mm-hmm. And I do think that no matter what you say about like, this is the dress rehearsal, really give it your all, I think everybody still
holds back.
And even just... Not even holding back. Like, they could have felt like they were giving it their all in the dress rehearsal, but it's still not the night. It's not mm-hmm. the adrenaline of, like, this is live right now.
Mm-hmm. Millions of people are watching this.
Yeah, I think that people might have given more on the day. There were times that felt kind of low energy on the actual broadcast.
Agreed.
However, you never know. Sometimes people give that, they get the adrenaline and they get worse.
True.
they really true. Give it all, and they're like, suddenly they're pushing too hard on their notes and stuff like
or
that.
Or overacting, or yeah, just like, I'm really committed to this.
Yeah.
And Rent is definitely one of those shows where you can do that.
Yeah.
And it's not good.
So did you feel that, how did you feel with what we saw last night versus what you had seen before?
The beginning of it was a real trip for me because, again, once the show started, when I saw it live, it was like, because that opening song is great. I'm like, it just is. And singing about the voicemails, it's all very exciting to me. And like, it's getting to see all the stuff and then like all the dancers and the scaffolding around you was so cool. And then when I saw it live, because it's so much in close-up, I was like, oh my God, I hate this. And I that wore off like a little bit. But yeah. I don't know.
You didn't
I just,
like the close-ups?
I feel like Rent is not meant for a single close-up. It is meant to, it is so melodramatic, and yet it deals with these real-life problems of the time. And that combination in a close-up camera, I think, is rough. Whereas when you see it on a stage with this kind of idea of New York and this scaffolding thing, and you get that it is a theatrical piece, I feel like that makes it work out. So when you just have a close-up of somebody just playing guitar and singing to their weirdo camera that even in the 90s, who had a camera like that?
Right. You never show him actually developing the film, which takes like 2 days.
And it's all silent footage. He never used a microphone.
Although he talks to it as if he's broadcasting a couple times.
Yeah, I mean,
because he's like, here we are at the protest, and you know.
Oh, he's voiceovering.
Yeah.
Constantly.
He needs a separate reel-to-reel microphone.
Yeah. I guess they did show one shot of him with like a reel-to-reel thing at some point.
The camera is not very forgiving of like the melodramatic emoting.
Yeah, so even I feel like if you're doing it right on stage, it still just looks kind of silly. So the idea of like, oh, I was so immersed and this was like such a, like no matter what happens, this opening number is going to be great. And then watching it, I was like, God, I can't believe how different this feels watching it on TV. It felt 1,000% different. And I do feel like you really lost the ensemble for the whole show. Because I really loved the ensemble. I thought they were really good. Mm-hmm. And they had
Was there stuff going on all around all the time?
No.
Not all the time.
But
like,
often.
Like, they would show it when it was happening in, like, little blibs and blobs. Yeah. But I do feel like it was just, I feel like they were always very much in the background. Whereas there were parts of the show where they felt a little more integral to just, like, giving the energy and the atmosphere of the time period and stuff. Mm-hmm. And in this one, I felt bad because I was just like, you could hardly see them almost all the time. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's too much, but they had that perfect ensemble overacting. Well, it's not overacting, but it's like every movement is like, the every muscle is acting it out. And I didn't think it was overacting. I thought it was the right amount, but
I always feel bad for those people because they're giving so much and they're like, everybody's like, anyway, let's look at the other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. That brings up a good point, because something that he had mentioned last night while watching it, Chris, was whenever there was the crowd was in the shot, because there was so much going on in multiple angles, you see the crowd kind of looking around. Like some people are looking that way, some people are looking that way, or like they're getting, and it looks like the audience is distracted. It looks like the audience isn't paying attention to what's happening. So it pulled, like that, I think, was detrimental to it because it made it look like the audience was disinterested.
Yeah.
Because the heads instead are all of like, around. Ooh, look at all this going on. There's someone singing right in front of them and the person's like turning.
Yeah. And that's because there were parts where there could be two equally big things happening totally across from you that you could not see both at the same time. So they weren't being crazy. I didn't love that the audience mic worked flawlessly. They turned the audience mic up to like the highest level because those cheers and shit were as loud as they could be. And I don't enjoy the just nonsense cheering. Like,
agreed.
They're cheering for a moment where, like, in that last scene where Mimi's dying, it's like, Mimi, they're like, yeah, you hit that note. Also, oh, she's dying. Yes. There's just so much of that where I'm like, just cheer at the end of the songs for fucks. Laugh when you want to laugh. Cheer. If you want to cheer when the Rent music starts for the opening number, great. That's fine. Mm-hmm. We're all going to do that.
Whenever anyone would do a sexy gyration, they would cheer.
Oh, God.
Like, ooh.
And there was so much of it. There was too much of it. Like there were a lot of moments where I was like, there's no need for sexiness right now. There's just none.
Were there any that you remember specifically?
Yeah, well, when Mimi
entered,
I was like, what is she doing? She was like, hey, can I have a candle? Like, or whatever she's asking for. It's like,
that's something I've always thought was a problem in the show itself as well, is she doesn't know who lives there. She doesn't know that she's never met Roger. She doesn't know who he is. So she's knocking and immediately like, I'm going to be so sexy while I ask for this candle to be lit. And I'm like, there could be a 90-year-old man on the other side of that door. You have no idea.
She's asking for her candle to be...
Yeah. The first thing she says is, got a light.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Would you light my candle? There are a lot of things with the show that I was like, wait a minute, like, especially watching it, I was like,
it's not a show to think about.
No,
hard. It's a show to go look at them. We all learned a little bit about AIDS today, which was when I was I was like 13 and this came out or whatever, and it was kind of like, I lived in the suburbs and I knew what AIDS was and everything, but it's like, oh, we're actually like seeing people deal with it. Now, knowing now what the AIDS crisis was like in the 80s and early 90s in New York, it's so, it's just like not accurate at all. But for a lot of dumb white people like me, this was kind of like, it did bring a lot of things out, you know, that felt very secretive and talked about. So yeah, nowadays, no. Although I did learn what AZT was from the show. I wouldn't have known that.
I never knew what that was until otherwise. Ryan.
Well, I think this show is just great. My only problems with this show are the book and the score.
Other than that,
I love the...
You hate the costumes in the set as well, but...
No, it's fine. I don't know.
I can't imagine seeing Rent as an adult.
I only saw it for
the
first time in 2016.
Yeah, saw the 20th anniversary tour.
And I just think so many parts of the script are just like laughably bad.
The thing that I found interesting was there were a lot of lyric tweaks in this production, and they added sort of a narration. A lot of times when they came back from commercial, they would have like Jonathan Larson quotes and things like that, which I thought gave it a nice kind of framing and some texture.
Yes, and one of them I made a really bad joke of, which I'll tell you off mic.
Oh, I think you should tell it online because it was really funny. I laughed out loud.
It's okay. I'm just warning the listeners that it's an offensive joke that I made that you make in the privacy of your own home when you're watching a show on television
with your bitchy husband.
But when they came back from the commercial and they were like, last night, what's his name broke his foot, and they said something like at the end. In the words of Jonathan Larson, something, I forget what they said. Mm-hmm. And then I said, like, in the words of Jonathan Larson, my head hurts.
Terrible.
That's a bad joke. No one condones that.
It's fine. It's true. Yeah. He died.
he died of a...
I wanted his photo at the end, like Jonathan Larson, 1960 to 1996. I wanted to also say, like, just to be clear, I didn't have AIDS.
Oh, that's a tombstone.
God. I know you might think that based on this show, but I didn't.
And the fact that I died young. But it wasn't that.
Yeah.
It was something else. I will say, and differences from the rehearsal to the live broadcast or whatever that was, we talked about like differences in performances and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I there was one particular cast member that I was real worried about because I like her and I was like, oh, she is not putting in a good performance. Yeah. And I thought she got much better for the live broadcast. Was Kelsey
from the woman who played
Joanne. Yeah, the woman who played Joanne. She was real rough.
I thought she was great.
Real low energy.
That's
in
so
the rehearsal.
Funny. She was horrible to me in rehearsal. I couldn't believe it because I was just like, of all the characters, Joanne's the only character that can be almost, it can be like a wide range of ages and sizes and not white. You can be anybody, you know, so you have a really wide swath of people to choose from. So I was like, to pick this girl who looks younger than everybody else, who's like a horrible actress, was very baffling to me. And then in the real show, I thought she was fine.
Yeah.
She definitely did get a lot better.
That's good.
But it was, I didn't see them, a lot of people thought she was like a highlight and that the Take Me or Leave Me was a highlight of the show. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I feel like that was just kind of the bare minimum of how that song needs to be. But
who was like your standout from the actual performance?
From seeing it live or?
No, from the final product.
I really liked the Mark. I liked the guy who played Mark. I thought he sang it well. I think he's a good mover. I thought he performed it fine. I liked that he especially in the scene right before What You Own, where he was kind of breaking down and crying. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is really a nice take on this moment that I'd not seen a Mark do before, which I liked.
Hmm.
Yeah, I liked him. I thought that the guy that played Collins was the best person by far.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the guy that played Judas in the live Jesus Christ Superstar.
Mm-hmm.
And no, I did. I thought he was the best one in both, seeing it live and on TV.
I mean, and probably he was at the rehearsal probably pretty close to good.
His I'll Cover Your Reprise was fantastic live.
It was so good.
Even in rehearsal, he was bringing it.
Yeah,
it was great. I don't.
My favorite was Valentina by far.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, really? No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Why? Give me seven reasons why.
It just made me feel more like, you know what? Everybody can try to sing. Not everybody can. It's a nice democratizing feeling.
Everyone can try to act and not everyone can.
I thought she was okay as an actress. I mean, whatever.
And I feel like in something else, she would be a fine actress too. Like, I don't know that a live to tape show is like
especially
her
for someone who's
thing.
Not like a, doesn't have probably any theater chops. This is like the worst situation to throw someone. And I always thought was that part is not a stunt casting part.
No.
Where you can just have someone show up.
And I feel like they thought, well, like Drag Race is popular. Like that's a drag queen. Put a drag queen in there. And then when you think about it, it's a very hard to sing part because very high. Mm-hmm. And
drag queens are known for not singing.
Yeah. Drag queens are known for not singing live words. And most of the time they don't have high voices if they are singers. I know. There's like nobody else on Drag Race I could think of that I feel like would be a good angel just because they don't have the, you know, they just aren't high tenor singers.
Ginger Minge is a good singer, right?
Yeah.
And
oh, really?
Doesn't
like Adore Delano is a oh, yeah, Willem is a singer, but still, I don't think Willem could sing. I don't know if Willem
I also
could
don't
that.
Think they would cast that as a white
character.
Person.
Yeah. Oh, sure. That's oh, that's thing. True. No, yeah. They would not.
Yeah. But I mean, it's interesting. Like, I think the LA cast of the original LA cast of Friends, Wilson Cruz was Angel. So I don't know how old he's looking now, but
well, also when we saw the 20th anniversary one, that Angel had been doing it for like 5 years.
Right.
Like that was like a pro at Angel. Uh-huh. Whoever that was.
Well, also Jay Rodriguez from the original Queer Eye was an Angel for a long time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He did. I think he was on Broadway for a while and I believe he did the national tour as well. Cause he was from Miami. So everyone in Miami was like, oh, Jay Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I think he went to my college, but, so I just feel I agree with you, like thinking like, oh, it's a drag queen, so let's get a drag queen. Mm-hmm. Sure, but you need to be able to play the part and sing the role.
Yeah, and it's just hard. It just takes like a not even like a. And I think also this is you also think you can just have a bunch of pop singers sing it, and like even that's hard. It's
yeah,
just
they
a
always
long
think
show.
That, though. Yeah,
it's long and it takes a lot of just endurance to get through the whole thing because that Mimi when we saw her she was out of breath 100% at the end of Out Tonight when we saw it in the
and
rehearsal.
She kind of was when I or she
tonight
she kind of was too like I think she definitely was better and Christ knows I don't blame her she's dancing around
times,
everywhere but it's
a couple times
hard.
I thought they had the in the Take Me or Leave Me I thought they had Vanessa Hudgens moving around way too much because she was not her voice wasn't sustaining it. So like just cut some of these moves. She's like doing acrobatics all over the staircase. And
right.
Stuff.
Yeah.
And unnecessary, unjustified.
Yeah. Like, it didn't
why
add
are
to,
we doing this?
Yeah.
Cause in Out Tonight, she's always like
right.
jumping around on those scaffolding and stuff, but
she should
be
bungee jumping.
Ooh. Out of the balconies.
I
imagining. Like
the I will say the one thing that I liked about this broadcast is I think that I think people should get used to Rent evolving. Like, there seems to be such resistance to it being staged in any way except the original that I think it's good to have one of the major productions of it be like, we're not wearing the same clothes.
Yeah.
We're staging Seasons of Love differently.
Mm-hmm.
Because if as people who like the show, like if it's truly a good show, it should be able to sustain some new thoughts to it.
Yeah. And I would not want to see Rent of like, it's Rent, but in 2019 or something. Like, I have no desire to see that ever because it's like not appropriate.
I did think about doing one in the year 3000.
That's fine.
That's fine.
That's fine.
And it's space AIDS.
Because there was like a huge solar flare and it took away all technology. And so like, we've got to go back to voicemails and stuff.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. But yeah, but like doing it in whatever other kind of way, costuming and like set wise, just keeping it in the early 90s, I would be fine with.
Yeah. I don't think the plot wouldn't make a whole lot of sense now. Like,
no.
People are living very healthy lives with HIV.
But it wouldn't stop people from doing that. I feel, sure. I feel like they would be like, well, just give them cell phones and it's the same.
Like, well, I just mean that, like, on Facebook, people were resistant to Seasons of Love not being in a straight line.
Yeah, people were unpleased.
Like, that's insane to me.
Yeah. Which, I honestly, I was going to ask you, because I don't remember them staging it the way it was. Because I remember them in the line when we saw it at the rehearsal. I'm pretty sure they stood on that runway and they were all in spots. For Seasons of Love.
I do remember, I feel like it did still start with part of it up in the area where they're having the life support meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember not being able to see that area very well.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly don't know. I cannot tell you for sure. I don't remember.
Okay.
I'm sure I was just like, hey, remember years ago, Amber? Here's a flood of other thoughts.
The thing about the staging of Seasons of Love, the way they did it on the telecast, I thought really worked well. I thought it worked very, very well. Because to me, Seasons of Love always felt like it existed outside of the realm of the actual plot of the show. Because it doesn't move the plot forward. And it's always just, hey, we're going to start Act Two with a pretty song and we're all going to stand in a line and we're not really in character. We're just kind of us. We're just singing this song. So it was always kind of outside of the actual plot. So I thought, to put it in the life support meeting and have those characters singing it really emotionally grounded it in a way that I've never seen that song work before. And I loved it. I thought it was great.
I feel like the show has three songs that feel like they're the last song in a show. And that's one of them. And I feel like staging it in that straight line seems like something you would do at the end of a show. I think Soft Power ended that way. They were all in a straight line and they just kind of like spoke to us. So I think it's good that they had them, you know, moving around a little bit and also bringing them in sort of one by one. But also, I think if they stood in a straight line, like, and the camera just sat on them, it would just be so boring.
No. Yeah, who cares? Yeah. Why would you possibly care to see that?
I think No Day But Today also feels like an end of show song. And the Millennium Living at the...
What You Own.
That feels like the end of a show, too.
Oh, that's interesting. That one doesn't as much feel like that feels more like the song before the last number kind of a song, which it sort of is.
That's their 11 o'clock number in this show.
That kind of is. That's their sit down, you're rocking the boat.
That's what really just wakes people up out of their stupor.
But what's so funny is I love that song. I've always loved it. I don't know why. I mean, truly, it defies all logic. If I try to break it down, there's nothing I could say to convince a person.
Yeah.
There's no reasoning I can bring in to tell you why. It is so bizarre how emotionally attached it gets to certain people because of just the moment and time of life and the world or whatever that it struck them. And it's just such a funny thing to have a show that you like with absolutely no reason.
Well, that's why I think that this is the way I feel about just art criticism now is just like, I feel like it's all that. Everybody's rational reasons for why they like or dislike things are just completely made up to justify their unconscious reactions to things, because I feel like Les Mis totally like bypasses people's rational.
It does.
Like
Les Mis is the other one where I think the music is a little more. It's just like it's so big and overwhelming.
As soon as you hear the like na 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 na, people like start crying as soon as they hear that. But I do think it applies to almost like these are extreme examples of it. But I also feel like, you know, somebody goes to see like The Favorite and they just viscerally don't like it. And all of the things that they say about why they don't like it, you're like, yeah, I see that, but I really liked it. You know, like the rational justifications almost all feel like, you know, I think Rent seems to tap into something like that more obviously than other things. But I kind of feel these days that it's true for almost everything.
Yeah, people have like a visceral reaction to things and then latch onto it. And
I think they come up with the rational reasons after they have the reaction is what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think by the time I had even heard about this show, like, I reacted. I remember thinking, like, this doesn't really sound like rock music to me. And by 96, 97, 98, I had already seen, like, Longtime Companion and, like, a bunch of other things that I thought dealt with AIDS in a much more real way.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just
there were tons of things that don't think it's a more real way for sure.
Also, I think if you're like 25, which is around what I was when it came out, that's an age when you're kind of like what 19-year-olds like. You're not going to be into.
Yep.
You're going to be like, that's for kids. The same way that I'm not into Saved by the Bell.
Right.
I'm like too old to be into that thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was 19 when Rent opened. So I was like right at the age where it was like, we're going straight for you.
Yeah. When is Angels in America?
Like 90. It might be 91 as
well. It's before this.
I mean, when did it take? Oh, geez. It did come out
It's
before.
Around the same time, because I think I saw that on a spring break. Yeah,
I think it's like 93.
I think Angels in America deals with the AIDS crisis in a much better way.
Of course it does. Well, but if you are at a cast party, you can't sing any of the songs of Angels of America.
No, but you can act it all out.
The only thing worse than imagining a bunch of kids singing Rent at a cast party is imagining them acting out scenes.
I did go Angels one summer. I went to visit my friend Scott at SMU. And the theater students that were there over the summer put together their own production of Angels in America.
Mm.
And it was college students playing all the characters.
Oh, sure.
Directed and starring as Roy Cohn, Brian Baumgartner from The Office.
Hmm.
Wait, who does he play in The Office?
Kevin.
Oh, funny.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, I want to see that now. What an intrigue.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, of course, like.
Well, because the thing I thought about when we watched it was that I think the reality of the AIDS crisis in New York around that time, yes, AIDS was a disease that hit a wide swath of people, but it really hit like people of color and gay men way harder than like a Wall Street banker at the life support meeting. And the life support meeting felt so like this is people from all walks of life. And it was like there's one real obvious gay guy and then like the banker dude.
Yeah.
And so it felt a little almost like erasure a little bit to be like, and I also think it's weird that that's what you set the story in. And the two, as far as the first production, the two main leads are two straight white guys.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it's sort of the biggest not surprise of musical theater.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the fact that they had a couple that was Latino and black and two guys, that was enough craziness for one show. Well, and also it's like it does suck that of course the two leads are white guys, but it was also still a pretty rare show to be like then the rest of the cast, the only other white person's Maureen and like random ensemble members, which isn't true for many a cast today still.
I thought that the Roger was a little bland, if that's okay for me to say.
No, I don't ever like Roger. I always skipped his songs. I don't care about anything Roger does or did. He's boring to me.
Mm.
I don't like the affectation of singing that kind of like put
do they
on
all
like
do that?
Yeah. One song that
because I thought it was really annoying that they'd have this sort of dialogue sung. And everybody else would be like, what are you doing? And he'd be like, I'm going over here.
And that's how I've always seen
it. Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, so I don't blame this actor for that, I guess.
Yeah, you can't. I was like, it would probably sound weird to him and the director if he was just like, I'm writing one great song. Oh, the phone rang.
One great.
Right.
Also, he sold his guitar and bought a car.
Mm-hmm.
So the guitar is very
expensive guitar and
then,
a cheap
which
car.
They haven't been able to eat or pay rent or afford electricity all this time, but he held on to that guitar.
I mean, I assumed he had other money or perhaps bartered for it. Economically, it doesn't check
and
out.
Then he has the guitar back at the end.
Because he sells the guitar back and gets the... Or he sells
the car
back.
He just
got
it out of Hawk.
Yeah.
When he sold the car that took him away and back. Yeah.
Oh, that's actually the lyric. Look at you.
Also, I had questions about the Collins character because he's a professor at NYU.
Yeah, he's curious. He's a professor. It sounds like he's an adjunct professor at NYU.
Oh, that's
so
why he's
not
homeless.
Tenured.
Well, he's
not homeless.
Isn't he, though? Because he moves in with Angel the night he meets her. So where's your apartment,
that's
Collins?
That's true.
And also, he says, welcome back to town. Oh, I just
I have to lie down. Yeah.
So where has he been?
Well, because was he at MIT, struck gold at MIT?
Yes. And then got fired.
It kind of sounded like he was at MIT, so he's coming back to teach at NYU. Mm-hmm. Oh, I just got back to town. I got mugged. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. This nice drag queen. I love her now. Great. Move in.
Right.
And but then he does. Angel does say, did they get any money? And he said, no, have none to get. So where is all your money,
I
Collins?
Think he just spends his money poorly. It's not,
bad,
you know,
investor.
It does happen. He's trying to help his friends out.
Right.
You know, he's giving them booze and vodka
then
all the time.
At the end, did he hack an ATM?
He yes. hacked, yeah. He hacked to, the ATM
at the food emporium.
Okay, because that seems like
that is
like
an
grand
offense.
Larceny. Like,
oh, yeah. There's a lot of crime that happens in this. Well, I mean, everyone's favorite character, the sweet and wonderful Angel, murders a dog for money.
And I have to say, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
That dog sounded annoying. She didn't stick a knife in its belly. She was and just also, like, I'm going to drum until you, one of us is going to back down and it ain't going to be me.
Well, a couple of things. One is like, it doesn't acknowledge at the beginning that it's Benny's dog. Isn't it Benny's dog?
It mm-hmm. is. It's yeah. It's not until
there's no. It's Lovey like Boheme. A big After. Reveal at yeah. the end.
No, you find out in Lovey Boheme. He says, "If there's a death in the family, if you must know, who died? Arakita, Evita, and that's where Angel realizes.
Oh, right. At but the end of but he one. Doesn't tell Benny.
No,
until,
he doesn't find out until after Angel's yeah. dead.
And also, I don't think you can drum dogs to death.
I
don't
if think you could. Can get, I would have done that.
I don't think
that
you can drum and make a dog jump off of a.
Also, they said that the dog is on the 23rd floor. So
well,
where exactly?
Well, they're at least fancy rich people.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but where is she drumming
Benny is
that,
a,
the drug dog can hear 23
you know,
stories up?
Well, it sounded like that lady let her in, let Angel into her apartment.
Oh.
So I think maybe it was some real close
But
drumming.
That lady is someone like Benny's wife or something?
No, it's a neighbor.
The neighbor.
Oh, I see.
So I think maybe she was like adjacent to yeah. the dog.
Because Benny's relationship to them is very strange as well.
Yeah.
Because he like lived with them. Mm-hmm. He was one of them. But now he's like a mogul.
He married a rich girl.
Uh-huh.
And so through her money, now he's been able to like do all these business deals or what have you.
Yeah.
Now he's trying to make a big
But
name
also
for
he's
himself.
Making a digital studio for them all to like
to pursue their dreams.
Right.
It's frankly a great deal.
He's got a lot of investors apparently to create this digital studio.
Well, he says mm-hmm. there's gonna be condos on the roof. That's gonna pay for the whole thing. Is that the condos are gonna be up there?
I'm just saying that he should put a Pinkberry there instead of a digital studio.
Oh,
just to if you want to make money.
Yeah.
The fact they got the I was like, did you say condos? I'll believe it. It yeah. all turns into condos.
That's true. It did.
You
know, I think
that.
The real victim of rent though is Allison.
My ears. Oh. Who's Allison?
My
Which one's
ears.
Allison?
Benny's unseen wife.
That's
because they rip her apart yeah. anytime they bring her up. They call her Muffy and whatnot.
Yeah.
And you never actually see her. All you see is her father in the Life Cafe scene.
Oh, right.
So it's like, and they trash him as
Benny
well.
Benny cheats
like,
on her all the time.
Yeah. So it's like, she's the real, and her beloved animal, her pet,
dog's dead.
Dies.
Yeah.
Commit suicide. Like, poor Allison.
It is a funny thing, because I remember years ago when I first... So I haven't looked up La Boheme since like 1997, but the part where the angel character in La Boheme does actually kill somebody's bird. Like that is a storyline from La Boheme.
Yeah.
And that is the like whatever seed money for their next little adventure of it. So I am I was very surprised that animal murder was it's always been a part of
it's
it.
It's just a thing.
It's just what you gotta do sometimes.
Huh. I think that I mean, it's been received pretty well. I mean, I feel like there was a lot of people at the beginning, like on Facebook, people were like, oh, this part's terrible. But I feel like a lot of my Facebook friends by the end of it were like, you know what? It was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
How did you guys feel about it?
I agree with that. I think Act 2 was stronger than Act 1.
Mm-hmm.
I think the emotion of that final scene finally being live and then having the original cast come out.
Yeah, that was neat.
It was great. I think it ended up being okay. Unfortunately, the ratings, it was the lowest rated live musical since The Sound of Music.
Really?
Yeah. It did not do well.
Of all time. Yeah.
But I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that they put out the press release that morning that it was not going to be live. So suddenly a bunch of people were like, oh, well, if it's not going to be live, I don't have to watch it right now. I can stream it later. So the ratings for that initial viewing were down. I think that played into it a lot, personally.
I mean, it also might just be that they overestimated how many people were interested in Rent.
It could be, because I do wonder, like, if you are a young person today
right.
who's into musical theater, Like, I you're don't into know Hamilton. That. Yeah, one, you're definitely into Hamilton, and I don't know how. I just don't know how much into Rent you would be, because it is like, and it's still a weird time period because it's dated, yet it's not quite so long ago that it gets to be a like historical artifact. Mm-hmm. You know, it still is kind of current-ish, so it gets into this weird, just like out of date territory. And
yeah, it doesn't function very well as an actual document of that history, because as soon as talk about it, somebody be like, well, that's not really what it was like. Like,
yeah.
Well, and now with so many more documentaries and you know, The Normal Heart they did on HBO, right? You know, it's like all of that stuff that was, you had to pretty much be in New York to be exposed to, is now, you know, in all kinds of mainstream stuff. And this is, yeah, very unrealistic depiction of AIDS. Or of drug abuse. That was also what
or
I thought.
Or of rock and roll. Or of just leases in or general.
I mean, definitely leases, how much money it takes to live, work ethic. Because they also, they end up kind of being just like rich kids who don't have to do anything for a living. Which was less of an issue when you're a young person who those are older people than you doing it, and you don't have a job because you live at home or in high school, that all seems very plausible.
Yeah.
But looking at that now, I do feel like even at 13 or whatever, seeing it today is a little, it's just all very far-fetched.
Because the characters from this are the people who are now people's parents telling millennials that they're like lazy.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true. One thing I always said about the original production of Rent was about like some 20-something year old kids in New York, like holding on fast to their ideals and not willing to sell out. And they're so empowered by their art. And then the movie of Rent, which came out 10 years later with the original cast mostly, was about 30-something year olds who needed to grow the fuck up and get a job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, cause it was
I sympathize with Benny from the very beginning that he comes in. Because he's literally just like, do you guys have the rent? And then they start singing.
I'm like, how fucking dare you, dude?
Well, I mean.
And they literally say, like, by the way, we're not paying next year's rent either. So.
I think that's hyperbole. I think they're getting carried away with next year's rent. And yes, he did say they didn't have to pay the rent. So to suddenly be like, hey, a year's worth of rent is due is angering. But
well, especially when it's so clearly a plot or a ploy, like, you know, hey, I'm going to use this as a bartering chip because I need you to cancel her protest next door.
And that's a thing too, where it's like, please cancel that protest. We don't need any that more one on person shows long. Like that. Maureen's a horrible artist. She should not be allowed to make art. Nobody's life's changed from that mooing song.
And also, she's doing the protest for the homeless. Like, who's watching this besides the homeless in that lot?
Well, yeah, because...
So what difference are you making in the world?
I do feel like in the...
Well, all the press that were there.
All the press.
There was no press. Mark is the only one who filmed it.
There's no press. There's also another thing someone pointed out was that no drag queens show up for Valentina's funeral.
Yeah. That was weird. I never thought about that, but that's really true. That, like, no one...
There are no friends in that community.
Well, that's one thing I said to you. I was like... Looking at these characters as an adult now, it's like they all meet and are immediately in love in the same night.
Yeah.
And then they are never seen with anybody else. So it's like, why do these people have no friends? They have literally no other friends other than the people they meet on one night.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also watching it this time, I was like, Maureen and Joanne need to break up forever. They're not meant to be together. They're, you know, that's just a passing thing.
Mm-hmm. Maureen, I hate the way the relationship is depicted.
I know. It's very unfair to Joanne. I'm just like, Joanne needs to go have a nice girlfriend. Maureen can be like in a polyamorous thing,
mm-hmm.
live her life. She will. And I was just like, I think Maureen definitely fucks a lot of people. And then about 2 years later, marries some dude and has kids and teaches drama in Scarsdale. Like, that is very clearly my imagining for Maureen's life.
I like what you said. I like what you said about, like, and then 3 minutes after the curtain comes down, Mimi actually dies. Like,
yeah.
Like, and I agree with that as well. Yeah. I think Mimi dies an hour tops after that.
Like, after right after song. That Jonathan Larson picture, a picture of Mimi.
So confusing. Like, did that actress just die?
In memoriam to this character.
In memoriam of Mimi died on the way to her home.
Yeah, yeah. The sad thing about New York is that the Bennies totally won. Like,
oh,
completely. Like, Manhattan was totally lost to those.
Seeing La Vie Boheme was sad. Seeing it live. I mean, seeing it live also was a lot cooler than seeing it on TV.
I'm sure you guys got a lot more energy off of them live.
Yeah. Did. Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like a lot of it came through the camera.
No. But it was, I was just like, Bohemia is long dead. It is dead. It's never coming back in real life. Like, it was such a, it was just such a vivid thing of like this, and this part, that part of New York was like pretty much dead even by the time Rent came out, you know?
Yeah.
1996, there were little pieces of it, but most of that was already gone. And now it's just so far removed. It's quite strange.
It's yeah. sad. It really is.
I remember when like that Union Square movie theater went in and like, mm-hmm. like stuff started and the there's a Kmart there.
Yeah. Oh, an oh, Astor yeah. Place. Yeah, yeah, it's yeah. a Kmart. Oh, like, yeah, the Village Voice is gone because they have all the Village Voice yeah. Kiosks on the in the show.
And somewhere near Astor Place, there was like, I remember a building that got torn down and then like a Citibank went up. And like this, there's a weird blue wavy building that's like mm-hmm. a Citibank. I remember just, people were just like, oh, it's going to.
Well, I remember the last time I went to New York, there was a bar that I used to go to in the meatpacking district that was very sketchy to get to. Like, I remember the first time I went, I was like, I'm going to die down here for sure. And I went back to New York. This was probably 5 years ago. And I decided to go to that bar and the bar's gone. And that entire neighborhood was like 17-year-old girls in little fuck me pumps running around like, oh my God, like selfie everywhere. It was just, it was, there were gaps everywhere. There was an Olive Garden and I was like, what happened to this neighborhood? Mm-hmm.
So how do you feel about these live performances in general?
They're problematic, but they...
I like almost none of them, but I'm excited about them all. And I want a million more to continue. I think it's so exciting, even though also I think you have your like brain has to switch into like I'm watching a play now. Like I think any show that first number is tough because it just looks weird, and as you like get into it, you kind of then suspend your disbelief. So there's always that like weirdness to them, but I don't know why I don't want them to fail. It's not even like I want to watch how terrible they are. Even though they are often so bad, like Peter Pan was so silly and poorly, just a bad idea from all accounts and embarrassing for everyone involved. But I'm still so happy that it happened, and I hope they do. I would see every musical live, mm-hmm. even though they're almost never what I wish them to be.
Hmm. The thing I don't get more than anything is, why is it so hard? Like, why is it so hard to get right? Because Peter Pan was filmed twice live in the 50s and 60s with Mary Martin. It was broadcast live on television, and they're wonderful. They are wonderfully done. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why 50 years later, with all this technology and all this know-how that we have, why are they getting worse? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And I think a lot of it comes from flat out, and I might get some flack for this, but I think thinking, oh, it's on television, we can't use theater people. We can't use people who are actually good at this mm-hmm. to do this. So we get Allison, whatever her name was, as Peter Pan, who was an abortion on that stage. She was horrible.
Mm-hmm. It was
Christopher, what's his name?
Oh, Christopher Walken.
Oh my God.
That was just Weekend at Bernie's, the musical. It was. Like, that was so rough.
Although who was pretty good was Chris Diamantopoulos.
Oh, and Christmas Story. He was great.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
That one's good.
It's pretty good, yeah. He's great, though. He's fantastic as the
I
man.
Bet that when the Mary Martin Peter Pans were done, there was a closer connection between TV people and theater people.
Maybe, but I mean, the original...
Because what year is that?
Like 1960, I think.
Right, so there's more of a... There's a lot more tradition back then of... Okay, we need content for this thing. Let's just take this play and film it. Like mm-hmm. it was Playhouse 90.
Yeah, there were all kinds of those still in the air.
So the people in TV are at least familiar with the values and priorities that make good theater.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are all TV people making these decisions, I would guess. And I think that the probably like every single decision that you think about that has gone into these, where you're just like, why did they decide that? Like, that's a really bad decision. Probably is not a decision like a Broadway producer would have made.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like the aesthetic of TV and film also, though, has changed so much from that era.
That's
that
true.
Even
the
if,
contrast
so like,
is bigger.
You know, Singing in the Rain, you watch and it's still great. But if somebody just did Singing in the Rain like that, unless they did it as this purposely like retro thing, it would be weird and like feel false to people. Like, I feel like the things used to be so much more presentational and now they are not. And then on TV, we've also gone into these like, everything looks like a film and is beautiful and real. And like, there's just a level of reality in television that didn't exist before. So then you put a musical in it, which is like the least real kind of thing. I think it's really hard to have something that still looks palatable as a TV thing and isn't just like, we're going to just shoot a proscenium and see how it goes.
Because in 1960, there's Peter Pan and then like the most, you know, maybe they're comparing it to Dragnet or something like that.
Yeah. Or like,
whereas now you're comparing it to like, you know, Breaking Bad.
Yeah, you're married to Breaking Bad or like Real Housewives or shit where it's like it is actual real people. I mean, granted, they're not always
Or you're comparing
being real,
it
but...
to like musicals done in filmed TV shows where they just go like way further. Like,
yeah,
you're comparing it to Crazy Ex-Girlfriend where the production numbers are like they because they can stop and reshoot and all that stuff.
Yeah, there's super intricate things, or even like how Chicago was. Like, Chicago had to be kind of a trick, the film, you know, to show that it's like inside her mind, and then that's why we get this like lavishness or whatever. It's just, it's harder to set up a musical. I think it is just harder to set up a musical at all, and then I think doing it live is technically a lot harder than it seems, because as doing theater, you're just like, well, whatever, you're just doing it like you are. But it's like, no, there's 50 million cameras and sound and this person, and like there's just so much more that goes into it.
I think also the casting is an issue.
That's what I was gonna say. That's the problem. Like,
but I will say that I don't think that a pure theater cast is necessary. I think that the kind of actor that can do it is maybe very rare, because still, like back in the day, that you might have actors that are doing theater and camera stuff. Whereas if we pull like the Last Rent touring cast to do this show, I guarantee they're going to be way too big for camera.
Oh sure. But I guess what I'm saying is like, there are people out there who can do both. There are people who do both. Like,
and like Laura Benanti was on Sound of Music, right? You know, and everybody loved her.
Christian
Borle was great. Christian
was in that and Peter Pan,
and he was good in Peter Pan.
He should have been Hook. He should have been Hook and the father. Yes. He won the Tony for playing Hook in Peter and the Starcatcher. It's like, he's there. He's an established person that you know because he was inside of music. Like, use him.
Yeah, I would. They probably should do that, because it's not like these ever get great ratings anyway.
Right.
So it's not like having Vanessa
Hudgens.
Well, they
kind of do, but I wonder if the... Because some of them got like 12 million people. I think maybe that was the highest rated one ever, was like 12 million people watching it.
Which, do you know which one that was?
I'm not sure. It might have been, I don't, Jesus Christ Superstar got 9 million. I know that for sure.
I'm sure John Legend helped with that. Sure.
Well, yeah, that's true. But I like the idea of like one
Me was
star.
Passion Live?
Passion Live?
No. Oh my God.
Passion, ooh, would that pack the seats? My God. People would be climbing over themselves to see Passion Live. The show
Vanessa
theater
Hudgens
people can't hardly do. Vanessa Hudgens.
As Fosca.
Oof. I mean, we can only hope. That's what, they're doing Hair next. NBC's doing Hair. I don't really know what I want to see next.
I've said this a lot. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No.
But I would really, 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 really love it if you would do something that hasn't already been a movie.
Yeah.
Like, do a show that hasn't been exposed yet. Like, there's a movie of Hair. There's a movie of Rent. There's the live staged version of Rent available on DVD. There are two Music Man movies. There are two Annies or three Annies.
Did Music Man happen already?
Music Man was years ago. They did it with Matthew Broderick and Kristen Chenoweth. It was not live.
Oh, they did that TV. Yeah.
And it was
horrid. That wasn't needed. Yeah. Nor was, that Annie wasn't good either. And it was Kathy Bates.
My pitch is, I think they should do Godspell, because I think they can screw around with it.
Oh, yeah.
They can change all the jokes. They can make it all stupid and horrible.
Godspell would be a top level. One minute I hate it, next minute I love it. Yeah. Just vacillating to extremes.
Because, you know, there would be like Bird Box jokes in it and, you know, Amazon Prime.
Sure, but like, do it on Easter. Why not? Like, do Godspell for an Easter broadcast like Superstar was.
Yeah.
Like, that makes a lot of sense.
I don't know why Bird Box is part of...
I don't know. They just...
No, you're 1,000% right.
They would just, you know...
It would be just meme references.
But that show seems like every time you see it, it has really corny present day jokes in it.
And it's meant to, because the jokes in the script are so dated. Like, they're you can't do them.
The Prestige one, I think, would be whenever they decide to do a Hamilton Live.
Yeah, that's what I think. I'm like, I would love for them to do Hamilton Live because it's an impossible show for most people to see.
Yeah.
And I don't think it would hurt ticket sales because I just feel like people that want to see Hamilton aren't going to be like, I saw the, you know, 10th version cast do it on NBC. Like, why would I ever need to see it live?
Yeah, if anything, I think it would help ticket sales. I mean, Chicago would not be running right now on Broadway if it weren't for that movie. Chicago would not still be running. So
Hamilton would be
great. I bet they would consider doing a Chicago one live.
Sure, why not? Yeah. Vanessa Hudgens as Roxy.
Is there a Waitress live coming? Mm-mm. That's one I would pitch.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be good.
That would be great. Yeah, that would work really well. There are so many shows out there that it's like, this is a mass appeal show. Like, I mean, a live Guys and Dolls would be super fun.
Oh, that would be cute.
I think that they might have trouble getting cast for some of these things because it's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
if you're not, like a Brandon Victor Dixon, who's like, yeah, I do this in my sleep. If you're someone who's kind of like iffy about the process, it's a lot of work. And there isn't a long history of them being like, we really took care of that actor and made them look great. You know, like,
yeah.
Or there's not a lot of history of, oh, did you see that career jump he had after he was in Sound of Music Live?
Well, plus if you're a TV or movie person, they don't necessarily want to jumping to Broadway is not like a jump up for them necessarily.
Yeah,
that's anymore. What they do after their shows.
Everybody trying to do the opposite of being on Broadway, trying to jump to TV.
I always feel bad when a star like decides, okay, fine, I'll do Broadway. It's like as their career is starting to go down, they're like, okay, I will grace you with my presence. And then the show is a flop because it's like, hey, guess what? Sorry, Orlando Bloom, you're not a star anymore.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to see you in Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, that's right.
Romeo. Nobody.
I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
And if you're flopping with Shakespeare, there's a problem because Shakespeare has a built-in audience.
Generally. I mean, Romeo and Juliet, it's a couple people know. I mean, a little niche.
People have heard of it. So, like, I mean, like a live West Side Story would be cool.
Be interesting.
Yeah, they're doing the movie.
Yeah.
It would be cool to see a very dance heavy show where maybe you could have a famous person as some, like a Sweet Charity
American
of sorts,
in Paris.
Maybe. Oh, God.
What a riveting.
Sweet Charity would be great. Sweet Charity would be really great.
Yeah, but then they'd be like, it's about a whore.
Yeah, but like, sure.
She's a dime a dancer or something.
As opposed to what? The show that we just watched about a prostitute junkie who dies of AIDS?
I know, where like, they say, I still can't get over that they couldn't say dildo, but they could say a slur for gay people on air.
Oh, when did they say that?
Faggots, lesbies, dykes, crossdressers,
too.
That
same song. Oh. Like, kept that
and
in.
And they said mucho masturbation.
Yeah, mutual?
Mucho.
Oh, he doesn't say mutual?
Mucho masturbation.
I swear I thought he said mutual in that song.
Maybe he does. I don't think I've ever looked at the lyrics, but I think it's mucho.
No, he says mucho.
I don't like.
I like the idea that he says mutual.
Mutual masturbation.
The idea that he wrote that. A professional writer wrote mucho masturbation.
Well,
disturbs me.
It seems in character with that kind of young single man who's just like, yeah, I'm being edgy. I'm talking about jerking off. You know,
it seems a lyric you'd write if you didn't actually know people like that. Like the ones in Spring Awakening, they're like, I go to my room, turn my stereo on. You know, like
Spring Awakening would probably be a good show to do. Yeah. That's one I absolutely don't want them to do, just me personally, because I think that show sucks.
They could do Spring Awakening.
It doesn't suck. I just personally don't like it. It's a good show that just me personally.
I mean, I like the music in Spring Awakening way more than Rent. Like, I do not like the music in Rent.
There
at
are
all.
Songs in Spring Awakening that are definitely much prettier. But then there are other songs in Spring Awakening that are just versions of songs from Rent.
Agreed.
Rent is a cast recording. I feel like you have to, because I didn't even like it at first. And then it just wormed its way into my mind.
Mm-hmm. I like the choral singing in No Day But Today. That part is beautiful. I really like that part.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part I like of that show.
That's the only part.
Okay.
I think if they did a live Spring Awakening, Fox should do it.
Yes.
And they should have Leah Michelle and Jonathan Groff be like the teachers.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
I would love to see how they take the swear words out.
Yeah.
That'd be very fun.
I wonder if some of it's also like we're on Fox, so we can go a little further than NBC or something.
Yeah.
I do think so. Because it's like they said everything but the F word and shit. Mm-hmm. Everything else was okay. Mm-hmm. Just those had to be cut out. And dildo. That's the bridge too far.
When is dildo in the...
Love You Bomb.
And they're like, the dildo has AIDS.
Yeah, well, I guess they do talk about the dildo has AIDS, is giving people AIDS, is patient one of AIDS.
Maybe we should wash it before we pass it around.
Yeah, that does give it a little bit of a... Now that I'm thinking about it.
Now, yeah.
Well, the dildo is also a hypodermic needle. So it's doing double duty.
Mm-hmm.
I love... That's another thing, speaking of just the kind of ridiculousness of the show. Like, there's the moment where Mimi kind of goes off by herself, and then the pusher approaches her and is like, it's going to be Happy New Year, as he gives her like a dime bag or something.
Yeah. Although, as I noted, a drug dealer that's homeless. But earlier, he's got his hands around like
I think that is just a matter of, we only have so many cast members.
I know.
We didn't feel like giving him a different coat to be the drug dealer. So he's going to be homeless and the drug dealer. He should have got a different coat. That was the lesson there, I think.
That moment I find really ridiculous in the show, because it's set up as like, oh God, Mimi, what are you doing? And it's like, it's been 6 days. I'm sure Roger's love did not cure her addiction to heroin in 6 days.
Well, and more likely their relationship would lead Roger back to heroin immediately. It's very, I don't know. NA, I'm sure, is very against Rent, because it is the worst thing to do if you have a heroin problem. But, you know, who needs to go into the details of heroin? It's sad. She's doing a drug and then she doesn't, and it's sad and then it's happy again.
I cleaned up just in time to die.
I think the thing that's missing from these live performances is that there's not a part of me that wants to like listen to them or watch them again. And while I'm watching them, I feel like I'm just doing homework. I'm like, oh, you can't turn it off. Like, if the power went out at any point during any of these live things, and they were like, sorry, power's out for 2 days, you wouldn't be like, oh, I gotta find a way to watch the rest of that.
To piggyback on that, I have never seen the last 10 minutes of Peter Pan live because my DVR cut out, and I just have never sought it out to see it.
That exact same thing happened to me. For Jesus Christ Superstar, I was actually into that one beginning to end, and I was actually excited.
That might be my favorite one so far.
I also like that music a lot, probably more than a normal person, so that might do it. But also because it was just kind of concerty, and they did a good job of the weirdness of the storytelling in that one is also like odd and can be like, you see the movie of that one too, and you're just like, what are we doing? It's so weird looking to just like have a bunch of hippies dance around Jesus. And then in this kind of concerty, like, ooh, we've got cool lights, you're like, yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. They're hippies dancing around Jesus. Like, the this sounds nice. And it like worked. And that one I was excited to watch the whole time.
Yeah. In watching both of the Jesus Christ Superstar and Rent, there were multiple times where I would just turn to Eric and be like, what happened now? Like,
oh, sure.
So he drove to Santa Fe and back between these two songs. Like,
mm-hmm.
In the span of like a month and a half.
Month and a half.
Things move quickly in New York in the 1990s.
But I feel like they're missing the, when you first put on Hamilton, I mean, and this is why Hamilton is so popular, is because it gets in your head and you're like, I have to listen to it again. Like for a lot of people, it has this like, I've got to consume it again immediately. And I don't think any of these have captured that.
Yeah, these are just based on the fact that they are live, and that is interesting and different to see people. It is more like we're watching people get through an obstacle course rather than like really do a show. Because you're right, even Jesus Christ Superstar, I don't really want to watch again.
Yeah.
I don't really want to even hear. Maybe I'd hear Brandon Victor Dixon's version of Judas. Like, I would maybe listen to some of his songs. But other than that, it's like I would go back to the original recordings of every single one of all of the shows, you know, to see again.
I might listen to Sarah Bareilles's I Don't Know How to Love Him.
Oh, sure.
I actually think that this is a big missed opportunity that they had, which is, I would love to know the behind the scenes discussions, but I really think that Roger should have done it with the cast.
Yes.
I think that that would have made people tune in to see it.
How are they going to do this?
Yeah. And it's just like, it's live, you know. He could, even if it was like, I'm in a wheelchair the whole time, first of all, it would have made it more sad. but also just like, so I hope that he wasn't the one to be like, I'm not going to do it.
I would bet he wouldn't have the power to
say no.
Say yeah. that. I don't think he'd have the power to make that call.
Yeah.
And I would imagine, I mean, I don't know, but I would imagine as an actor in that situation, because he's not like a super big star. He was like on X Factor or something. He's a singer.
Yeah.
You know, I just feel like he'd be like, oh my God, I don't want to be the reason this whole thing fucks up. And like, to me, I'll do whatever. I obviously can't walk, but like, please, I'll try whatever I can do.
Yeah. That would have been a story that he would have been on talk shows for the next 3 months talking about.
Everybody, and it's like exactly like Rent, except slightly less tragic. But it's like Rent was supposed to go on. Jonathan Larson died, and they had like a reading and thing anyway, and it was part of why the show happened, because they rallied around despite this horrible tragedy because it was so important to them. So the idea that it's just like, yeah, just tell us, it's going to look a little weird, and like obviously there's no lyrics to say why he's in a cast, but we're going to use our imaginations here, and you know, like, just see what it looks like. And because I guarantee it would have been equally as exciting, if not more so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a decision made by somebody thinking about TV rather than theater.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Andy Carl broke his leg in the middle of a Groundhog Day, and then like came back and sang the last song in a cast or something. And that's all people were talking about for that week.
Of course, you'd go crazy.
And of course, the audience is just like, oh my God, it's so amazing that you like came back out on stage to finish the show.
Well, when I saw Wicked the first time, Kristen Chenoweth was in a neck brace. She had whiplash. And she put a little string of diamonds around it. And she did the whole show. Her little toss was like shoulder, shoulder. Because she's like, but yeah, I think she got whiplash. I think she was in a car accident. So for the first like couple weeks of the previews, she did it in a neck brace, but she did it.
Wow.
Or like when Adina at the end of the run fell through the trap and like hurt herself pretty severely.
Yeah.
She wasn't able to do the last like week of the run, which was supposed to be the end of her run, but she came out and did For Good at the last, what would have been her last performance. Like people love that stuff. I mean, 15 years later, I remember that story.
Like throw in whatever rant. I'm like, I know they couldn't have thrown in some person who played Roger before or whatever. Like, I'm sure that would be too difficult with the intricacies of like the staging. But even so, I'm just like, yes, you could have though. Because what Roger does the least of, like, he's not Angel dancing around shit. He mostly sits and plays guitar and walks and closes a door and lights a candle. And then he does like climb up some shit, you know, at the end in that Living in America song. They could have just cut that part out, you know. So like, I know it is. It's like he really could have sat in a chair. It wouldn't have hurt it that badly.
No, he just sits on that table in the first scene, strumming that guitar.
Yeah, he sits. I mean, he mostly sits. He sits and hides a bag of heroin at one point.
But there is that really important moment where the scaffolding starts to fly. So
where he's not moving.
That's true. That is true.
He could have done that on a wheelchair. Would have been better. That's how he was getting. It was a real working.
And that's
elevator.
A moment where they're clearly both high on heroin. And they think that's happening.
I remember because really we were sitting like right underneath it. I'm like, that's going to go up. I'm sure it's going to go. There it goes.
Oh, it go up in the original? Or were you just guessing? No,
they were up in the higher parts of the scaffolding and the original staging. Going back real quick, I will say that a lot of the staging was very reminiscent of the original production. And I think part of the reason for that is when we were at the rehearsal, Michael Greif was there, the original director. He was very much hands-on. He was very much around and watching things and seeing how things looked. But like, Without You with the three hospital beds was almost exact. Contact was almost exact. Like there was a lot of moments where it was like, this is really evoking that original production a lot, which I think was nice that they paid homage. But then when they strayed, that's when people got really upset, because it was like, this all looks like what I'm used to. Why is Seasons of Love up there? What's happening? So I think that kind of jarred
people. They did that little Easter egg to the costume.
That was cute.
I mean, I feel like, I'm sure some people were bothered by the fact they didn't even wear the, you know, like that probably bothered some
people. I mean, as stupid as I was at first, I was just like, where are his fucking glasses? What are we doing here? What are we doing? Where are those glasses? Yep. It's so stupid. But then immediately they're like, he doesn't. He's not a real person that needs glasses. He's not going around blind.
Yeah.
It's okay. We can make do.
Where are they?
They look fine.
It's funny. Something that I had never, ever thought about until watching the broadcast just now is, in what world are Mark and Maureen a couple? Like, because they were together for a while at some point.
I think that Maureen likes obviously being dominant than people. And I think she was probably a little bit younger when she got with Mark. And she just loved the fact that she could do anything. And Mark would be so, he just worshipped her.
Like,
I think she always wants to be with somebody she's much prettier than and much, higher status in her own mind. Because in the original one, it's Joanne's a heavier woman and older and all that kind of stuff. You know, Maureen's a very hot lady. She can have whoever she wants. And I think she thinks she's getting people that are less than her. With Joanne, she got more than she bargained for. And Joanne should break up with her and start her own life.
Yeah, I wish it wasn't portrayed that the only times we see the two of them together, they're fighting.
They are. I mean, that was seeing it this time. I was like, girls, end it. They just break up and get together every scene. And you're like, well, there's just no reason for this. You're both young. Nobody's got kids here.
And it also makes you assume that for the months that we're not seeing them, that that's all that's happening then, too. Because every time we see them, they're angry and they're breaking up. So it's like, they didn't just have a good month and a half that we didn't see.
Quit hanging out.
Right.
Go somewhere. Joanne, get out of here. You don't belong here in this poor person's world.
Someone has to do the Doll's House Part 2 of Joanne.
Where are they now?
Yeah. So, Amber, let's talk a little bit about your project.
Oh.
Because you guys are about to collaborate on the Masked Singer podcast.
I know. To move into more culturally relevant stuff. Yes, the Masked Singer. Yeah. So, yeah, I have a podcast with Tim Murray about the Masked Singer because I was just immediately drawn to it. And, the Masked Singer I like because I do like the mystery, but I like the Eurovision-y weirdness, which I think you also picked up on.
Yes.
And I do like that there's just this, bizarro spectacle on TV. That is just a bunch of strange people in costumes and dancers. That's very enjoyable. So, yeah, so Eric will be on the podcast soon. I believe that you will also be in the podcast.
Yeah.
I certainly hope so.
We are very behind and have to watch a bunch of episodes.
We're only
okay.
One episode behind.
Really?
Yeah.
There's been four.
Oh.
And then the fifth one will air on Wednesday.
So I think
we're only one behind.
Yeah.
Wow.
People online have not figured out how to not spoil that show. It's really annoying.
Well,
I was spoiled by Floyd Petty.
I know.
On a Facebook thread, and I was like,
well, see, I think because they're not the same spoilers where it's like RuPaul's Drag Race spoilers, where it's like somebody on the show leaked information. This is still just people guessing and Googling.
But
so it's
sometimes they're like, I was right about blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I saw your guess, and then you said you were right. So,
oh, yeah. People are announcing their guesses and being correct immediately upon viewing. There's no consideration for somebody's watching this any moment after it aired live. That's for sure.
Yes. People are. Amber's father, Floyd, was on that thread being like, one thread was like, this is stupid. I don't
know. No, all he said was how terrible it was. It was horrible. He couldn't watch it. It's the worst thing he's ever seen. It's the end of society. And then he's like, but also P.S. the deer is Terry Bradshaw. Which I think is how everyone watches the show. I'm like, oh, get the fuck out of here. This fucking show, boo. Don't like it. Wait a minute. Who's that deer? I've got it. No, I actually love it. I've seen that happen to multiple people. I am proud to admit I'm not too cool to not like it. I embrace it as stupid.
I would like it with all the judges' comments removed.
Agreed.
Because I don't enjoy the judges.
I would love a teensy touch of, if you couldn't Google it, then I wouldn't mind a super quick, ooh, maybe it's her, maybe it's her, maybe it's her. Really fast, just to, get your brain going, you know? But no, the judges are, of course, too much. I expected even more judge shenanigans padding. And the show for a singing show is not super padded, which is really saying something. Yeah, I would love way less judges. I also, now that, it's pretty likely a lot of the internet guesses are right for most of the rest of the people. So I'm like, they've got to introduce something a little more tricky, I think.
I think the clue packages were maybe a little too easy because people really figured it, after the first, we were like, this, this, and this.
Yeah, people figured them out. And then there's a second clue package, the next time we see those. And even though those gave away fewer things, there were still a few of them that were like, this is a pretty huge clue.
Yeah.
So yeah, but we're recapping the show every week.
And what's a, is it just called Masked Singer Podcast?
It's just the Masked Podcast. In case we would get sued calling it the Masked Singer Podcast.
No,
we didn't really
know. You guys are going to get invited to like the season two premiere, I'm sure.
Of course. Yes, I think so.
You're
going
to be hosting the show next year.
I think our opinion is very important.
Okay, important question though. Do you guys talk about Nick Cannon's headwear choices?
Why? I have talked about, I wore a turban in on his behalf, which you couldn't see. It's a podcast. Uh-huh. I've talked about that. Tim especially doesn't enjoy Nick Cannon, and I am more just like ambivalent to him. But his, oh yeah, and Tim also called it like his Carson Kressley like fantasy suits, because he is wearing these like RuPaul-esque patterned suits. His hair is so strange, so I guess I understand the turbans, because his hair is like just too long. It was, he's like, I'm not cutting it. What's the weirdest hat you have?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just a baseball cap.
I'll wear various colored turbans and then say questionable things about homosexuality on Twitter and then dress like this and make no mention of it.
Oh, dear.
So
all this on the Mask podcast.
Yeah. I think when he was defending Kevin Hart was more of his foray into the world of questionable tweets. But yeah, so if you want to hear about fashions, my opinion on sequins, and then we do go through like who, you know, the internet is saying and stuff. So if you really are averse to spoilers, it's not the greatest, but why be that way? Just listen. If you enjoy the show, it should be enjoyable.
Where can people find that podcast?
Well, it's on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, rather, The Masked Podcast. And then if you do want to email, that email is themaskedsingerpodcast@gmail.com. But yes, you can find it at Stitcher and iTunes. And I believe, I mean, we're the only Masked Singer podcast.
That's amazing.
Around.
That's
crazy. Yeah. So as far as I know, last time I checked, so we're one of a, we're necessary, I think.
Absolutely.
The term necessary.
I mean, I can't watch a show without people telling me what to think about it. So that's great.
I know. And sadly, that's true for me. I search out because I'm like, what did they think? They're wrong. Stupid. So stupid. Well, what did they think, though, again? Next episode, what do they think?
Well, we'll be back next week. This week I think I'm doing Magic to Do Thursday, and I might be doing Baby on Friday. Tomorrow night, we're going to go see Hello, Dolly.
A show that Chris did not enjoy on Broadway.
No, worst money I've ever spent.
So he's going to sit through it again, this time with Betty Buckley.
I mean, because it was so expensive to see it with Bette Midler, and it was so not enjoyable for me.
It's not a show that I love. It's never been a show that I've loved. So,
but I don't think I've seen Betty Buckley live.
Oh.
I don't think I have.
Oh.
So,
well, then you should. I saw her in Sunset Boulevard.
And I'm interested to see that show and that track with somebody different. I don't know. Because I don't... It's like, I don't really imagine her in it or Donna Murphy in it.
That's the thing. Like, I've never seen Betty Buckley do comedy. So it's going to be very interesting to me.
And you still won't have.
Well, I mean, yeah.
But yeah, we'll see that. We'll be able to talk about that next week.
Yay.
And then... We're still figuring out what we're going to do when Eric goes to Australia.
In 14 days.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
But Amber, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It was a blast.
Yay. Check out The Masked Podcast on Apple, iTunes, and Stitcher. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.